They warned us about this in seminary, that when you start preaching on a regular basis, anything and everything can become sermon fodder. It is an occupational hazard. You can be kicking back and watching a sitcom on television when suddenly you sit up and say, I could use that in a sermon. Or you could be watching a film in a movie theater or at home on television when it hits you that the story embodies a religious concept so well you must use it in a sermon. This happens to me quite often because I love watching movies. Now, when it comes to sermon fodder, some movies stand head and shoulders, or should I say flippers and beaks, over other movies with religious themes. And today, I'm going to talk about a film that, in ways both wise and silly, addresses some deep issues about how we can live together on this earth, and also in our theologically diverse Unitarian Universalist congregations. I'm speaking, of course, of that epic great Muppets from Space. This fine film's religious themes are obvious from its first scene. See an ark, Noah's ark, in a desolate landscape. Clouds glower menacingly on the horizon and lightning strikes. We see animals entering the ark two by two. And then, in the foreground, we see the distinctive profile of our hero. He even has a heroic name, Gonzo the Great. Yes, Gonzo with his funny beaky thing, who loves chickens and who shoots himself from cannons for fun. That Gonzo. Gonzo rushes up to the ark and speaks to Noah, who he addresses as Mr. the Ark. He says he thought he'd missed the boat. Noah asks him, what are you? It so happens that a related question, who are you, is a central religious question. Gonzo replies, well, put me down as a whatever. Noah asks, what is your species? And Gonzo says, there's only one of me. Noah replies in a deep voice rolling like thunder itself, then you are doomed. He slams the door shut, and Gonzo looks up at the heavens and cries from the depths of his furry little soul, no, no, I don't want to be alone. No! It is, of course, only a nightmare, but it sets the stage for a story of self-discovery, Gonzo's quest to solve the problem of his own identity. Now, that sounds like a spiritual journey to me. The story has elements that may be familiar to many of us when we think about our own paths, the paths that led us here today. Many people who enter houses of worship these days have never been part of a congregation before. Their lack of religious background, coupled with the isolation so rampant in our society, might leave them feeling like spiritual oddities, like there is no place where they could fit in, spiritually speaking. Like Gonzo approaching the ark, they see what looks like a haven of safety in a threatening world and are drawn to it. Like Gonzo, some might find church doors slammed in their faces. This may be because their theology is too different for that place, or because their social values are too liberal, or because they are gay or lesbian, transgender or bisexual. And as doors close to them, like Gonzo, the spirits of these searchers might cry to the heavens, no, no, I don't want to be alone. Others who come to us seeking religious community have had experiences with churches in the past. However, their beliefs may have changed so much over time that they no longer fit in. Or, as often happens in the queer community, when they come out, their faith of origin pushed them out. These people can feel cut off from their religious roots, which is a source of grief. Many no longer know who they are as religious people, but need a safe haven. People who visit houses of worship are, at some level, trying to solve the problem of their religious identity. Like Gonzo, they want to know where they belong. People who come to us having been rejected by other churches desire a safe place in which to explore the question of their religious or spiritual identity. If we are able to provide that for them, then they make our lives more beautiful. Sometimes we succeed in doing this. Sometimes we fail. It is not just other churches that slam doors in people's faces. For example, a mother and her adult disabled child came for a while to the church I was serving in Franklin, New Hampshire. There was no place for the daughter's wheelchair amongst our pews. She stuck out in the middle aisle, and after a while, they stopped coming. I learned from this experience that we need to be ready to accept people with special needs. Another family that attended for a while stopped because they said we were too political. It's true that our congregations can be uncomfortable for people who are anywhere right of left. It is important to recognize the complexity of issues and the diversity of views that can be held by religiously liberal people. After all, there's a place among the Muppets for the ultra-American Sam the Eagle, and he teaches the chickens aerobics in the mornings. He sits at the same table with all the others. Gonzo needed gentle acceptance and support on his journey of self-discovery. We all look for guidance in our spiritual journeys. For Moses, it came through a burning bush. For Gonzo, it is through food. At the beginning of the movie, his Captain Alphabet cereal spells out a message, telling him to watch the sky. As he sits on the roof doing so, a great and mysterious force strikes him, transporting him to a starry realm where he meets Cosmic Knowledge Fish. The Cosmic Knowledge Fish reveals that Gonzo is a space alien and that his people are trying to reach him. He's not alone after all. Gonzo's attempts to contact his alien family land him in trouble with a secret government agency looking out for the threat of an alien invasion. They imprison poor Gonzo, and the Muppet Gang responds by rallying round and forming a rescue party. They find Gonzo and break him out, making their getaway in the Electric Mayhem Band's multicolored bus. Kermit, the wise leader, says, "See, guys, when we pull together, we can do anything." That's when Gonzo informs them that they need to go to the beach at Point Doom because his sandwich told him to do so. See, I told you Gonzo receives spiritual guidance from food. Everyone groans, but Kermit says to Gonzo, "It doesn't matter what we believe. I mean, if you believe you need to go meet your alien brothers, then I say, well, we're going to the beach." They do, of course. And here's where I think this movie can teach us some deep lessons about how to be together in religious community. The Muppets, out of love for one another, are willing to stretch themselves in order to accept and support Gonzo on his journey of discovery. They do this even though they don't believe that he's really receiving messages from the beyond. Now, we are not expected to support each other in beliefs quite as out there as Gonzo's. However, some of the beliefs of our brothers and sisters in faith may seem very alien to our worldview. Their religious or political beliefs or the way they live their lives may be completely different from our own. Nevertheless, our value of inclusion calls us to accept and support each other in our spiritual journeys. Nobody says this will be easy. However, I believe any religion worth its salt should take us beyond our comfort zones and challenge us to grow. Muppets from Space provides an extreme example of a diverse community committing to support one of its members in his admittedly odd life journey. In doing so, this ragtag group often demonstrates what it means to be a healthy community. For instance, they know they're all different from one another, and yet, in some important ways, they are very similar. They have a good sense of their separate identities and of their identity as a group. They know what their individual gifts are and contribute them to the group's efforts. Moreover, the Muppet Gang has a good sense of loyalty to one another. For instance, when the gang gets together to go rescue Gonzo, Kermit says they're going to go even though it's dangerous because Gonzo is one of us, and no matter what happens and no matter what obstacles we face, we never forget one of our own. Of course, poking fun at Muppet imperfection, someone immediately points out to Kermit that they just forgot Beaker and Dr. Bunsen, Honeydew, back at the gas station. The heroic music that had been playing in the background winds down, but Kermit recovers quickly and says, "Well, from now on, we never forget one of our own." And of course, the heroic music gears up again. To me, this shows what it means to be covenantal community. We looked out for each other and promote one another's well-being, knowing we will do this imperfectly. Sometimes we mess up, we drop the ball, we leave some members behind at the gas station. The best we can do when that happens is to make amends as well as we can and to resolve to do better in the future. In the movie Muppets from Space, the Muppet Gang awaits with Gonzo on the beach until his alien family appears. Gonzo finally solves the problem of where he came from and who he is, but he still faces the problem of where he belongs. Does he belong with the alien family that he just met, who look like him, or is his place with his ragtag Muppet family? You can guess how it ends. Gonzo stays with those who loved and supported him on his journey. The people who come to us seeking answers to the question of their own religious identities may face this choice at some point. Do they find communities with others that look like them? Or do they join our congregations with members whose beliefs and lives are as varied as the Muppets look? My own religious journey has brought me close to my liberal Christian roots, something I would never have expected when I first entered a Unitarian Universalist church nearly 30 years ago. On the way to where I am now, I found that some healing with the goddess, read works by Buddhist teachers like Thich Nhat Hanh, learned about Jewish religious traditions, and developed a yoga practice. I could not have taken all those steps along my journey in most churches. I love this about our faith. The many sources of inspiration open to us allow us to explore a wide range of spiritual paths and in the same religious community. And I choose to remain here because I love the diversity our acceptance of one another can create. I love being in community with people who believe very differently from me. Maybe that's true of Gonzo as well. To me, it's more interesting to be among people who look or feel or believe differently. To me, it's more beautiful that way. Wherever those who seek amongst us end up, with us or in other religious communities, I salute them for taking up the question of their spiritual identities. I hope we can provide safe haven for seekers to explore their beliefs. If they go back to their faiths of origin, I hope they find love and acceptance. If they go to faiths where everyone holds very similar beliefs, I hope they find a sense of belonging and connection. If they choose to stay with us, I welcome them with an open and thankful heart. Like Kermit and the rest of the Muppets did for Gonzo, I accept them as they are and will support them loyally in their spiritual journeys, however different those journeys are from my own, wherever those journeys take them. You see, I believe that when we are accepted as we are, we grow in self-esteem. This growth can uncover gifts we never knew we had, so that we stand a little taller and bloom a little brighter into this, our lovely bouquet of colors, scents, and sizes. Or should I say, our variegated crew of fur, beaks, feathers, flippers, fins, waggly ears, and bulgy eyes. We are earthlings, after all.
It's discussion time. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say?
First of all, Kate, thank you for reading. That was awesome. The whole time, all I could think was, oh, this is why PBS is always on the chopping block for federal funding.
Anybody else?
The acceptance in and acceptance of community. Sheila Kennedy, who is a professor, or excuse me, is a retired professor of law and public policy at McKinney School of Law, came and spoke to, I asked her to speak about freedom, and what she chose to spoke about was the tension between freedom and community. And that tension comes from the fact that most communities say, either you have to do this or you have to believe this or whatever. And a lot of people don't really like what they're told they have to do or believe. And so they're pulled away from communities toward what they consider freedom. And a couple different groups at the church at the time talked about that sermon, and we all agreed that we did not feel that tension in this church because all we ask you to do is follow our good moral and ethical principles in how you live your life. We don't have any other rules. We don't tell you what to believe or anything. So I think that's very related to the whole issue of where do you find community. It's a good place to find it is in UU churches.
What this brought to mind for me is back when I had my first child, I met a neighbor lady, and this would have been like mid-90s, like 93, 94, and she was very evangelical, and I didn't go to any church at all. I was agnostic. But we had kids the same age. She had just had a baby, and my mother-in-law was like, oh, you guys should get together. And we got together, and we got to know each other, and she was very evangelical, she was a musician, a involved in musical stuff, and we would have these great discussions, and as she got to know me, she said to me, I can't believe you're not a Christian because your values are so much like mine. And I responded, I know a lot of people that have my values that aren't Christians, and quite frankly, this attitude that only Christians have values is offensive to all of us, and why a lot of... Anyway, so that was kind of a beginning. But we differed politically, we differed parentally, parental philosophies, very different. And we would just have these discussions about, you know, Paul, you know, unsurprisingly, she was a conservative Republican, and I wasn't. But we could talk to each other, and we were great friends and great supports for each other. And I just don't think that could happen anymore today. And part of it's like even within me, you know, like if I met somebody today that I didn't know and I found out they were Republican, I think I would be like, ooh, you know? I don't know that I would be as open to have it. And I just miss that, you know? It's like that's so sad that we recognized our commonalities and could have respectful, meaningful, just sharing of very, very differing points of view. That's what it made me think of.
Thank you, Mary. Anybody else?
I have a couple of friends, well, that I think both of them no longer support Trump, but they did initially. And what I realized from them, and I won't tell the whole story because it's kind of long, but is that pretty much anybody they meet, they don't, I mean, if they're Hispanic or they're black, they don't immediately assume they're evil. What they've been taught to be afraid of is those people as a group. And when they meet an individual, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them just see them as another person. And so if you stay away from politics, like you did, Mary, you can have a conversation, and it can be a good conversation. And in fact, I've seen a couple of articles, I think one was in The Atlantic, about the way to converse with people who are still Trump reporters is to talk about your values and your... just kind of like you did. So I think there's people who definitely you can't do that with, but I think there's some who you can.
I'm sorry.
This past summer, I was traveling for work, and I was in, I was traveling to go, anyway, I was in Alabama, and I was sitting on a bench, and this woman came and sat down beside me. And she just had this heavy sigh about her. And she said, oh, you know, the world is such a nasty place, and I just don't know what's happened to common decency anymore. And I agreed with her, you know, about how things were just, you know, nasty, and people seemed hateful, and it was such a shame. And, you know, she was similar to my age. She's like, I just don't recognize the world anymore. You know, this is not the world I grew up in, and, you know, it's so sad, and, you know, I agreed. And then she looked at me, and she asked me, and this was before the election, of course, she's like, who do you support? And I said, well, who do you support? And she said, I'm MAGA, baby. But our conversation did not end there. You know, I would say, you know, well, I don't understand how you can, you know, and she's like, oh, you know, whatever, he's nasty, but blah, 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 blah. And we continued, you know, our conversation continued, and when we parted, we both wished each other well and hoped things would get better for all of us. So it's possible, I guess. It's not always common.
Thank you.
we all know this, but it does feel so much like social media has just done this to us, where we see these comments and these negative aspects of all of humanity in our faces all the time, and the 24-hour news cycle. It's not just social media, but where, you know, I am old enough to remember the days before that, and that you would come across these people in your life that were just so offensive and awful, but you weren't seeing it every single day because it wasn't in your face every single day. It was just occasionally a conversation would lead there, or occasionally you would witness something that was kind of rough. And so I do wonder if, yeah, like if there's just like a need to really step away from that and find communities of real people, having face-to-face conversations, and I don't know, like I take myself down that thought process all the time, and then I think, well, but I can't make the whole world do that, so.
Well, I've got my mind on the church and where we're heading over the next few months. And I think that if we could offer the community a monthly discussion group and just figure out a name to call it and just offer that to give an outlet to people in the community to come and talk to other people about some of this stuff, have different topics, I think we could do that quite nicely. Either start downstairs and move up here when we get the turnout. Anyway, I think it's great.
Hello, I'm Joseph. I have a student named Jimena at Lyndhurst 7th and 8th grade center, which is where I teach in Wayne Township. It's just on the outskirts of the inner city. And last week, Monday, she couldn't eat lunch. She couldn't talk to anyone. She couldn't do anything. She was bawling and completely petrified by everything that's going on. And I mentioned that my daughter is Mexican, and she just, a new burst of tears just completely fell apart. And I admit that I have struggled lately with not feeling hatred myself. And I'm a pacifist. I've always fought really hard to control those feelings, that rage that comes naturally to me. And it's very difficult right now. Knowing Jimena is probably at home, in bed, or wherever she is, petrified right now. And that, you know, they're going to go after citizens and non-citizens. They've already been going after legal immigrants. Very few illegal immigrants, honestly. I've been struggling with hatred, rage. We watched a movie called The Menu last night, which doesn't seem related, but it's about being authentic. It's about stepping away from the constant chaos of the 24-hour news cycle. I recently got rid of Facebook. It's about stepping away from all the, I don't want to cuss, the nonsense, and remembering who we are. Anyway, why we do what we do. Anyway, I'm trying to say that we all care about the same thing, which is kids. We all care about protecting each other. We all care about this stuff. And in terms of what to do, There's never been a time where people, brown students from other countries especially, need you to be out there, need me, need you to say something, do something, anything. Put yourself in front of the tank, from that picture from, I can't remember what city it was. Anyway, thank you.
Anybody else?
I appreciate what you said, Joseph, because I'm struggling with the same things, like of not feeling hatred. I saw a funny meme wishing harm on some people, and I kind of laughed. I had to, like, smack myself. No, that's not funny. You know, you don't wish this on anyone. But the thing that you said about we share the whole same values, one of the hardest things for me, and there was an instance in my life where I was shocked too, because I was with a group of people. We didn't all agree on something, and I said something like, oh, well, you know, we all want everybody to be able to go to the doctor when they want to. And somebody at the table actually said, no, I don't care about that. So the hardest part then comes when people don't, you know, what happens when you realize that there are some people who don't share those values. And that's the harder swallow.
There's a set of postcards from, I think it's the 1800s, of a hanging of a slave. And they were sold as novelty items, like a circus. And the part that horrifies me is not necessarily the hanging, because we know that happened. We know that that's something we need to, that was awful. It was the thousands and thousands of people watching. And that's just what...
And buying postcards to commemorate.
And buying novelty items to commemorate the time they saw a black boy. You know, they were young, they were most of the time euthanized and then hung. I had another point. I forgot.
It'll come back. So this conversation is the reason that this church needs to exist.
It was a rally Wednesday downtown if you want to get some of that frustration. Another one this Wednesday.
Wednesday?
Downtown.
I always have a problem when people talk about the good old days, when people were honest. All the neighbors loved each other. We have always, there's always a segment of human beings that are nasty and horrible, and we've done horrible things in this country. And, you know, it's easy to identify those things. And around the world, so... I was listening to Van Jones. He's a, I think he quit CNN, but he was a, what do you call it? A host, commentator, whatever. And he was saying, you know, we've been through similar things, you know, Nelson Mandela, and, you know, he gave other examples, but I just try to remember that. And the nastiness on social media, I think, is it's constant, it's relentless, but those thoughts come from people, you know. Social media doesn't make them say those things. I think they exacerbate each other. But I just feel hope that we're all calling our representatives and we're going to protests and, you know, people are doing things, and Congress is standing up. Unfortunately, if we just get a few of those Republicans to just move over.
To your point as well, I remembered. And I would be interested to hear your thoughts, because it's not a very, well, cutting people out sometimes has to be done for mental health. If someone I know hates Ximena, I don't necessarily want to waste my time trying to convince them to care about an 11-year-old girl, 12-year-old girl. That seems like a basic, too basic of a premise. Brown or white or whatever, no, people shouldn't have health care. Well, maybe you're not part of this conversation then. But I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that. Just for the sake of mental health, at least.
Well, and your safety too. I think that's where the importance of community comes in. You have to trust that if you can't have that conversation yourself, because of your safety or your fear or, you know, just protecting your stress, we have to be able to trust that hopefully someone else will have that conversation for you when you can't do it yourself.
I think we had a sermon message, whatever it was, last year that was about a book about how to have those kind of conversations and have some sort of impact on those around you in your community. And the key thing was everybody needs to choose to be there. So, you know, when we're talking about people who are cut out of the conversation, they're not choosing to be in those conversations. They're choosing to, you know, not engage. And the other thing is it needs to be small groups and it needs to be repetition. So, you know, for example, like, you know, I know I've had some of these like religious conversations with people who had never met an atheist or an agnostic before in my knitting group that meets every Monday, you know, and it was an eye-opening experience for everybody involved because we knew we would see each other the next Monday and we would still talk about, you know, our values and, you know, and other unrelated crap, you know. So I think that's the main thing on a small level, you know, other than rallies or other than stepping in front of a tank, it's getting together with people who are willing to have conversations, who may be different from you. Yeah, there has to be willingness on either side, and there has to be an agreement that you will see them again, you know, in the same context with maybe other shared values or interests.
Last comment for me, and then I'm going to get off this thing. I can't stop. I wanted to give you a bit of good news to end, well, I'm sorry, not to end it, but to finish my part in this, which is that I talked to, let's see, I taught 180 kids last semester, and I teach 150 this semester, white, black, brown, Asian, etc. And I want you all to know, because this might come up, I've heard it before, these kids are not dumb, they're not lazy, they're not unintelligent, they're not, these are all things I've heard, these are examples of things I've heard about my students. They're not lazy, they're not dirty, they are very aware of what's happening politically, they are very morality, fairness minded. And if you ever run into someone who dares to tell you that Joseph's or whoever's students, what they really mean is brown, are unintelligent or whatever it is, you can tell them as of right now, my boots are on the ground and they are incredible. And there's hope. They're not, social media has not ruined their brains as much as news tells us it has. In fact, TikTok has actually done a bit of good for their brains in terms of being protest-minded and being fairness-minded. So just so you have that, you now have that ammunition that's not probably a good word. You now have that tool in your toolbox for when you're in an argument and someone says, well, kids these days are just lazy and blah, blah, blah. And say, no, Joseph said specifically, and he comes here every Sunday now, that they're very intelligent and they know you're wrong.
I want to thank you for that, Joseph, because I have a 21, a 24-year-old, and I am continuously astounded by things I'm just currently reading about that they already know at 21 and 24.
Yes.
They have such a huge base of knowledge that they have gotten from the phones and the other opportunities to learn online that we didn't have access to. I mean, when I was their age, I didn't know shit,
right.
Quite frankly.
Anyone else have a comment?
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
We will go ahead and move on. Next, we have hymn number 311. Please rise and join as you are willing and able.